It doesn't matter what kind of stress it is. Pyrrols tend to accumulate knowing that stress is around. The problem is, if you are sustained in that stress level over time, you will develop pyrrol disorder at some point, which makes you more stress intolerant.
Today, I've brought Dr. Judith Bowman back on the show to talk about a little-known stress intolerant disorder your doctor has likely never even heard of. It's called pyrrol disorder, or pyroluria, and it's something I regularly test for in my clinic. Pyrrol disorder is seen in people of all ages and is often genetically inherited in Northern European people groups such as the Irish and Scandinavian populations. It's connected to a plethora of symptoms and disorders such as extreme anger and rage, rapid mood swings, night owl tendencies, high anxiety, depression, morning nausea, alcoholism, and bipolar disorder, to name a few. Dr. Bowman and I take a deep dive into what this disorder is and how it may be impacting your mental and physical health, as well as myths that could be potentially harmful. Dr. Judith Bowman co-founded Mensa Medical in 2008 with her colleague, Dr. Albert Mensa. Dr. Bowman combines traditional medicine with the biochemical approach to treating behavioral and cognitive disorders, autism spectrum disorder, depression, including postpartum depression and women's health, anxiety, eating disorders, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, and other biochemical imbalances. Dr. Bowman has treated over 30,000 patients using all-natural, non-pharmaceutical, targeted nutrient therapy and trains physicians in advanced nutrient therapy techniques and facilitates outreach clinics all over the United States. Welcome back, Dr. Bowman. Thanks for being here. It's always so great to see you and be able to talk about these important topics.
Well, thank you. I'm always so pleased to be here. Thank you.
Last month, we talked about eating disorders and a little known condition called pyrrol disorder, or pyroluria. So I wanted to do a special episode on this stress disorder that's actually very common in our world today. And for our listeners, pyrrol molecules are constantly excreted in our urine. And for most people, this isn't a big deal. However, for someone with pyrrol disorder, nutrient deficiencies occur because these molecules have an affinity for zinc and vitamin B6 and latch onto and excrete them in urine before the body is able to absorb them. So, Dr. Bowman, what does zinc and vitamin B6 do for us, and why are they important?
Well, what's not known to the lay public is that B6 and zinc are actually critical to the production of neurotransmitters, i.e. if you don't have enough of them, you're not going to be able to manufacture serotonin. Overall sense of well-being is not going to be in the right place. GABA, aminobutyric acid, your ability to calm yourself in what I call a timely manner, that's going to be a problem. Even dopamine, which is your all is right with the world, I won the lottery, life is good, that particular just euphoric emotion just really can't be there in amounts that would be appropriate for whatever circumstances, perhaps those I mentioned. But if you don't have B6 and zinc, you are going to be with a challenge of really responding appropriately to your emotional situation.
Thank you. And I know we have talked a lot about both of those important nutrients in the past and, mm-hmm. and their connection to some of the other imbalances and disorders that we work with. Dr. Bowman, I'm curious, can you also share how we know the impact of zinc and vitamin B6 on the brain? And as you so wonderfully shared, calming and neurotransmitters and so forth. What about the body? What about the immune system and things like that?
Well, as you are aware, our bodies are wonderfully made and they multitask. One thing that's been extremely important, particularly lately, is the immune system. If you are low in zinc, your immune system will likely not respond in a manner that is best suited for you. So it's easy for you to have lots of colds, and not just colds and fevers and flus and viruses and bacteria and all of that that you can't really fight in an effective way, but also things like cancers, things like that. Your immune system is involved in more than just what you typically think of in terms of like the common cold or bacteria, disease, or virus processes. And so it fights everything that shouldn't be there relative to, if you want to call it, a naughty cell or a naughty invasion of something that just shouldn't be there.
I know we've shared this, or I think I've said this in a lot of previous episodes, but zinc is kind of like this master mineral.
That
provides support for everything, hormones, enzymes, neurotransmitters, you name it, right?
Right. Our usual spiel is hormones, enzymes, neurotransmitters, and other proteins. You know, zinc just plays a key role in their production. Well, their production primarily, so that you can do what you need to do effectively and efficiently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you for breaking that down. And vitamin B6 gets a lot of play. I know with regard to the different forms of vitamin B6, there's also P5P.
Sure.
People get a little bit confused by that. Would you speak into that a little bit for us as well, Dr. Bowman?
I would love to. Now, most people these days have heard of things like extended release, or something that is kind of prolonged a little longer, slow release or extended release. Well, very often, particularly at Mensa Medical, we will use both forms of B6 and P5P. You could consider B6 in its so-called regular form more or less like an extended release. It will always kind of be there feeding into the system, guess what, to turn into the active form, P5P. And so very often we will use both of those. So that's more or less kind of the extended release form of the active form of B6, which is P5P, pyridoxine 5-phosphate.
Thank you for breaking that down. And B6, in terms of, you know, again, neurotransmitter activity, why is it so critical for that? And then, of course, there are all the other processes in our body, all of our other body systems that need B6. But why is it so critically important for the brain, especially?
Well, it's sitting at the doorway of the production of all your neurotransmitters, all of them, not just things like dopamine, GABA, or serotonin. It is sitting there waiting for the last instruction. Without it, they won't be made, not in amounts that are going to be beneficial to you if you're at a deficit. And so that's why it's critically important. Of course, it has other roles that it does, but it's primarily focused in on the production of neurotransmitters.
Fantastic. Thank you. And you and I both know that there is a lot of people often test for B6 just with blood testing.
Right.
There are some challenges with that. Can you speak into that as well?
Okay. We have not really found an absolute dependable B6 test that will really give us the accuracy that we need. And so we've tried and we haven't seen anything consistent that actually gives an accurate measure that it's there, that it's not there. And so generally we will kind of avoid that measure of it. However, if you check for pyroles, that's in a sense an indirect measurement that there's enough or not enough.
Thank you. That's really helpful, because there's so much confusion. And again, I know we talked about this in our last show together. There's a lot of confusion between, you know, why would we want to look at a zinc level and then also the urine with regard to pyrrole disorder. And I always try to explain that they're actually two separate. Want to look at both, but they are very separate. Can you talk about that a little bit as well?
I will try to. Zinc, of course, the master multitasker, you need to know how much there is, because there's so many things that it's going to implicate in terms of what could be going wrong with so many different systems. You need it for DNA replication. You need it for your immune system. You actually need it for a lot of different processes beyond that for them to work correctly. B6, on the other hand, also involved a bit in blood cell production. It works with the other B vitamins in a particular ratio to make certain things happen. And so both are really very, very important. Now, there are some Bs that you can test that will give you an accurate result. Things like folate, believe it or not, you can test that one. Certainly B12, you can test that one. But B6 in and of itself, it's such an active and kind of a volatile, they call it I'm trying to think of the actual term that it falls. It's the aldehyde in actuality. And it is so busy in that it changes and fluctuates within minutes, within moments. So to really get an accurate photocopy of what's going on, it is very difficult because it's somewhat pulsatile. But you do need enough of it, put it like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. And also, again, as we've shared before, we need zinc and vitamin C for methylation to be balanced.
Absolutely. So many things, zinc, vitamin C, magnesium, and a list of other cofactors, if you want to call them that, are absolutely necessary for your methylation pathway to work correctly. So any deficits in any of those can throw that pathway off or push it in a different direction. And so when we test, we're actually looking for balance. When the balance is not there, we want to make sure that the building blocks are on board to put it in balance and thereby function appropriately.
Mm-hmm. Okay, wonderful. Thank you for explaining that. I think there's just a lot of confusion out there with regard to testing, with regard to nutrients, and that just really, you know, puts it in perspective. Now let's talk about fish oil. it seems like every doctor, nutritionist, influencer, you know, they all tell us we need a fish oil supplement, but you and I both know this isn't exactly accurate. And I just would love it if you could share with us, why is it that fish oil supplements aren't such a great idea for people with pyrrol disorder?
Well, this is where we come with individuality. Not all is fair necessarily in terms of some of the decisions to use it or not to use it. It just turns out that if you are pyrroluric, that by itself says that, oh, there's an imbalance here between omega-3s and omega-6. And if you're pyrroluric, you need to substitute all those omega-3s with an omega-6 to get the balance that you need. And usually it's like a 4-to-1 ratio. Once that's in place, then you begin to function appropriately in terms of all the things that the omegas can do for you. Now let me explain this. Undoubtedly, omega-3s are thought to be some of the most great sources to provoke an uninflamed scenario. In other words, they decrease inflammation in a big kind of way. However, what's interesting is that becomes paradoxical if you are a person who is deficient in omega-6. And so instead of producing an anti-inflammatory scenario, you become a little more inflamed. Now, I don't know if I can paint a cartoon for you here. So there's a highway, an expressway, a freeway, whatever you want to call it. And very often there are these help trucks that simply monitor the highway to make sure things are going okay, see what's happening on the sides of the roads. There may be accidents here and there. Well, in general, your omega-3 is going to be the general sergeant kind of looking for little problems that are along the way on the highway. It doesn't mean they'll necessarily stop, but they will be scanning for it. On the other hand, if there's some inflammation happening, you're also going to get your omega-6 kind of kicking in, not only noticing what the heck is happening on the highway, but literally pulling over to see what the damage is. What they will do is call for recruits to handle the problem. Okay? And so then that's actually what you need if you have pyrrol disorder. If you don't have pyrrol disorder, then the scanning truck will probably just kind of, pass you up and maybe send a message to somebody that maybe you need to look in on that. You know, it's one of those kind of things. Mm-hmm. But in pyrrol disorder, it's a little different. It becomes a little more specific. In other words, what you have is, and this is going to sound weird, there's good inflammation and there's bad inflammation. So when you're talking about omega-6, believe it or not, it's called a good inflammation going on to the extent that it's going to provoke healing, meaning that it's going to send forth what you call the chemotactic factors that will actually come in, recruit the soldiers to really clean up the mess and move it along. So that's really what you need if it's a pyrroluric situation like that. If it's not, then well, and you're in balance, then you really have nothing to worry about and just keep the omega-3s kind of surveying the area, making sure everything is okay. Pretty much it.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate you breaking this down because there are, of course, a lot of questions about this and why, and just trying to explain that arachidonic acid pathway. I think the way that your analogy just beautifully spoke into why that's the case and what's going on there. And, you know, again, we're not saying that fish oil is bad and you should stay away from it forever. It's just, again, within that initial diagnosis and initial starting of treatment,
exactly.
Just want to be very careful.
And what I've done relative to that, because many patients will ask, well, you know, I know I had pyrrol disorder. I took the omega-6 and that's gone now. In fact, my pyrrols are so way down. I am looking good. Do you think I can actually add back in some omega-3s at this time? And the answer for me is usually yes. Go ahead and try some of those. However, if we note that it's climbing or the trending is in the wrong direction, then the balance might be still a little off. But I find it really a benefit if you can afford to take some of the omega-3s after the thyroid disorder is actually pretty much handled.
Mm-hmm. Great. Wonderful. Thank you for sharing that and explaining that in detail. Pyroluria is also what we call a stress disorder, and it can be acquired by anyone during times of stress, but there's also a genetic component in certain people groups with particular features. I was curious if you could share with us, Dr. Bowman, what are those features and why do those people groups tend to be more susceptible?
Yes, we are so on point in terms of explaining pyroluria disorder as a stress intolerant disorder. Well, let me tell you this, for all those who are listening, there's probably been pyroluria in your lifetime at some point. What provokes it? Circumstances, stress, bereavement, physiologic stressors. So it doesn't matter what kind of stress it is, pyroles tend to accumulate knowing that stress is around. The problem is, if you are sustained in that stress level over time, you will develop pyroluria disorder at some point, which makes you more stress intolerant. Now, let's go to the extreme of pyroluria disorder. Really super high numbers tends to indicate there might be a genetic predisposition towards pyroluria here. And though we often tease about, say, the Irish population or the Nordic population, Swedish population, there tends to be a genetic predisposition towards that, meaning that under stressful situations, pyroles are just abundant, which makes you even more stressful. It's kind of like the anxiety feeds upon itself. You're anxious, and then you're anxious that you're going to get anxious, and the circle keeps getting larger and larger and larger until you stop it, which means that you probably need more B6 and zinc in order to produce neurotransmitters that are going to allow you to function through that process. So one of the more extreme presentations, and everybody please understand this, very often the diagnosis of bipolar disorder is provided when in actuality, if you wanted to try to explain it from a physiologic standpoint, it's really pyroluria disorder. And think about it. Since you need B6 and zinc to actually make your neurotransmitters that are going to give you an overall sense of well-being and allow you to have that even keel of mood and demeanor, well, guess what? You're going to behave at two different ends depending on the level of severity. You can go from severe major depression to high mania, the opposite end of that. And so and that's because your neurotransmitters are dysregulated or out of balance. And so the diagnosis that you'd be seeing from any psychiatrist's office would probably be one of a possible bipolar disorder or major depression. And so once those things are corrected, and we've seen it done thousands of times, the so-called diagnosis does not present itself. It just does not. It's one of those things that if we had gotten to you before and corrected that before you went to the psychiatrist, I'm not sure you'd have a diagnosis or that you'd necessarily need to go to one. Put it like that. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate you speaking into that because, and also with rapid cycling, when pyroles are very, very extreme, right?
Right, very extreme. We're talking about within minutes, within hours, not just days and months of swinging from one to the other. Happy in the morning, totally and completely in major depression by the time of the evening. That can happen and is seen on a regular basis when it's severe.
You know, we've talked a lot in the past about labels, not really caring for labels because we're looking at, you know, chemistry. In my mind, that just creates so much more ease when we know, gosh, there's a biochemical underpinning to this. I'm not a bad person. I'm not a horrible person. And this isn't my fault. And I think that people need to hear that. I think that's really important to the healing process. So that's really so powerful that you said that. And yeah, you know, and I also, I mean, this is just an aside, but, you know, whenever I hear about like a fiery redhead joke or, you know, I always think of pyroluria disorder, you know, because those certain features that, you know, I had kind of, you know, blonde hair, very light skin, light eyes, red hair. And we tend to see a lot of pyroluria disorder in within those types of features, those Northern European features that you were.
This is true. And I'm sure that most folks, if you have any kind of media device at all, has seen the cartoons, has seen the little vignettes and videos of the Irish brawl or the that kind of thing going on. Because really, in that particular population, there's almost 85% pyroluria. And it's just the way it is. You know, was called stress intolerance, which means you're just going to haul off and hit somebody. And before you know it, if you want to add alcohol to that, well, now we're here for the setup. We really are.
Yes. Thank you. And that was my next question, because we tend to see a lot of alcoholism. Obviously, you know, there's a lot of, you know, kind of Irish proverbs and jokes, if you will, about drinking. But we tend to see it in these people groups. And I always try to share with people, you know, there's a lot of pyroluria going on, and that is often connected. So can you talk about that a little bit, that connection between pyral disorder and alcoholism?
Almost certainly. What people are looking for, and you probably know this, they're just trying to self-medicate because they're looking for some sense of contentment. And if it's not contentment, some level of happiness, some level of satisfaction in their emotional state. And so I always talk about, well, you know, happy hour has its place. It's a self-medicating therapy, so to speak. Unfortunately, there's detriments that come with it. But for the time period that it is, there's a little bit of peace. There's a little bit of contentment. And for some people, unfortunately, there's a little bit of inhibition, which very often can lead to some trouble. So some of it might be fighting, you know, but yeah, that's just the way it is. It's pyral disorder. It's dysregulated neurotransmitters, which for at least a couple hours or so, can be kind of handled by the alcohol. I mean, that's just the way it is. And let me tell you this. Okay. Here's the kind of the link from a physiologic biochemical standpoint. Alcohol, interestingly, shares a platform. It has its own platform, if you want to call it a receptor site. It's on the same level, more or less, as GABA, aminobutyric acid, GABA, that we're always talking about. Well, they both kind of tell the cell to produce a calming neurotransmitter, GABA. And so alcohol shares that platform on the different side of the receptor site, but it's still there. And so there's no wonder then, from a chemical, biological, physiological standpoint, that alcohol would provide some level of relief. And I'm certainly not saying go out and do that, because of the detriments that are there. And it's the repetition of it that keeps you in that habit, which eventually becomes detrimental if it's overdone. But that's part of the explanation as to why that actually works, at least for a time.
I'm so glad that you spoke into that, Dr. Bowman, because so many times we hear from our patients that, especially I notice more in our male patients, that when they have alcohol, when they drink, it actually makes them feel better. Mm-hmm. And so for you to explain the biochemical connection there, I think is really powerful in understanding why that is the case. Now, of course, for most people, you know, you have a cocktail, you feel a little great. You know, you feel a little bit happy for
it's
a while.
Okay.
And then there's a kind of a crash that happens later, maybe some depression and so forth. When I hear, again, noticing this more in our male population, when I hear that the alcohol continuously makes me feel good, it makes sense with regard to that biochemical underpinning that you just explained and shared with us. Now, we know pyral disorder can create depression, very high anxiety. We've talked about the underpinning with rapid cycling bipolar disorder and just the various types of bipolar. And we know there's that huge connection with regard to mental health, very high anxiety, anger and rage. We see a lot of temper tantrums and little ones, the terrible twos. But there are also a lot of other symptoms that aren't necessarily connected to what we would consider mental health symptoms. And I would love to have that discussion because, you know, we know night owl tendencies, sensory sensitivities, things like that. Can you share more about that with us, Dr. Bowman?
I'm certainly going to try to. Well, the terrible twos, the tweens and the preteens, growth in and of itself is going to provoke really a physiologic stressor that's going to cause pyrals to be created. And so this is why you have your terrible twos. I just can't handle it, Mom. I'm going to have a tantrum. Same thing exists with the teenagers. They are in such rapid growth states until normal physiology is going to provoke pyral production simply because of growth in and of itself. And your body tends to lean towards physiology before it goes for mental, emotional maturity. And so this is why a lot of our teens, and certainly our terrible twos, are going to be a little squirrely from an emotional standpoint and have tantrums and things like that. But that doesn't exclude the adults who are under tremendous pressure for who knows what reason.
you know, whenever I speak with a parent and they say, gosh, my kid is up all night. Mm-hmm. And I go, yeah, they're a night owl.
Absolutely.
I would say one of the bigger symptoms that we see in many of the people that we work with, teens and adults alike. And another interesting disorder, misophonia, which is connected to light and sound and sensory issues, textural issues, things like that. You know, a lot of our kids, are very, very picky eaters. And the texture has to be just right for that meal to be acceptable to the child and for the parent to try and even coerce them, if you will.
I'm glad you brought that up, though. In actuality, things like light, odor, sound, and texture become extremely sensitive, you could say. Everything is overblown. A mountain is a mountain instead of a molehill, what it really should be. You hear things like photophobia. Oh, the lights are too bright. Oh, the sounds are too much. Sensory scenarios are just, I just can't stand it. I'm wearing these clothes and it's a real problem for me. They feel like they're wax paper or sand on my body. I can't stand it. We've had many a patient say that I can only wear this one outfit because this is the only outfit that I'm comfortable in. Otherwise, it feels like I'm wearing a burlap sack. Those kind of things are actually very, very true. And not only that, you know, once you talk about sensitivities, light, odor, sound, and texture, you have to talk about also emotions. And so something that would make you a little bit sad will send you into major depression instead. I mean, what is that? Maybe also there's a giddiness that's there. Very, very silly, which is not normal either. I mean, all of us could be a little silly, but a prolonged level of that says that, no, something's off here. We're not quite responding appropriately to this particular scenario. So yes, that's a major player. I'm glad you brought it up, though, because it is oh so real.
If you've ever wished you could just find that one thing that's causing your suffering, you're not alone. We've all hoped for a magic pill that will fix that one root cause of our pain. But I'm here to tell you there's no such thing as one root cause. I blame influencer marketing and Dr. Google for selling us on those magic pills. They claim to have all the answers to our health problems, yet few people get well from their guidance. In fact, most of the time, I see people getting worse from their guidance because they keep falling down the rabbit hole of information overload that may or may not apply to them. This process is terribly draining on your pocketbook, as well as physical and emotional health, not to mention what can happen if a diet or supplement is not appropriate for your chemistry. If you're ready to start the healing process, I invite you to book a complimentary consultation with me to see how I can help you overcome things like hormonal imbalances, ADHD, chronic fatigue, depression, anxiety, brain fog, and digestive distress. Go to eatfor.life, then click the Work With Me tab at the top to book your complimentary consultation today. I'm glad we're talking about the symptoms that are more in the physical world, and also nausea is something we see a lot in our pyloric patients. And the reason I bring this up is because there's still a disconnect between the brain and the body. And I want people to understand that everything is connected. Everything matters. Everyone is unique. You know, that is the way that we practice. And it's really important that we're looking at all of these symptoms because they help us when we're entering into a therapeutic partnership. That's how I like to view what we do. It's a therapeutic partnership. It's not here, just go do this. Here's a script for this. It's nowhere. We're going to start here. Here's your chemistry. These are the foods that I'd like you to focus on. Here's your nutrient protocol, and then move forward from there. And I think that's really key because all of these things impact the body in a significant way. Even like with multiple sclerosis, we see pyral disorder with multiple sclerosis. You know, things that most people wouldn't are unaware of and don't think of is what I'm trying to say. And I loved it when you talked about the stress factor and that this is a stress intolerant disorder. I think of people that like to do a lot of fasting. You know, intermittent fasting is very, very popular. What people also don't realize when they're fasting, you know, of course, duration is going to also impact that,
major,
is that they can become very pyroloric.
Absolutely.
And people that don't tolerate intermittent fasting often are pyroloric already.
Well, this is true. This is absolutely true. It's such an individual sort of scenario. It really is. And I do think that, yes, indeed, there's probably big time benefits from intermittent fasting. You're giving your GI tract a rest. It's trying to recover. It's trying to repair. No doubt about that. There's going to be benefits with that. Now, let's talk about individuality. How long is your intermittent fasting before you start to develop pyro disorder? You know, and so on an individual basis, it's something to be dealt with in terms of what's right for you in terms of timing. Certainly a fast that's really too long is going to provoke pyro disorder at some point in time. And so from an individual sort of basis, you have to figure out where your niche is in terms of how you're going to respond. Any physiologic challenge, I don't care what it is. So whether it's an emotional one and there's duress, whether it's bereavement, whether you're in the hospital because you broke your leg or you have some really debilitating illness or some terminal illness, whatever the heck it is, pyro disorder is generally climbing or trying to climb on board simply because that's what happens under stress. It really is. So for all of those scenarios, it would help us to at least keep on board things that are going to help us fight, which would be, of course, B6 and zinc.
Yes, yes. I also think of our, we talked about this when we talked about eating disorders for eating disorder awareness, that our patients that are starving themselves essentially are often very, very pyroloric. And then, you know, and then more nutritional deficiencies ensue. And then the pyrols continue to increase. And there's just, it's just heartbreaking.
Right. I tend to agree with you there. You made a great point, though, in alluding to the multiple factorial place that this has, how you eat, what you eat, nutrient supplementation, if it's needed, other modalities that are available to you, whether it's psychology or your psychiatrist or it's cranial sacral therapy or it's acupuncture or whatever it is. There's multiple ways that you can fight this thing in terms of alleviating stress. And really, more than just one modality needs to be had. So you have to think of it like that, not just, say, supplementation or just only eating. Extreme case. You're a battered female. I'm just not you personally, but I'm just saying someone who's a battered female who's undergone all types of stress, you can give her all the supplements in the world. However, if she doesn't get some therapy for what's going on, if she doesn't also perhaps supplement in terms of, say, whatever physiologic changes are going on, whether it's B6 and zinc deficiency or otherwise, the scenario says that she needs to get out of her scenario in order to really fight this thing fairly. You can't stay in a situation that provokes the stress and think that somehow you can override it. It doesn't work that way. It really doesn't.
I'm so glad you said that because that is just so critical. And that's what I love about being able to partner with you and Dr. Mensa and all of the other practitioners and doctors that we partner with. Because again, that's part of that therapeutic partnership and relationship with the patient. And you're correct. So many people, especially with the onset of COVID and this pandemic, are in abusive situations. And we've talked about that previously. And that's creating more stress. And yes, when you're constantly bombarded, when your limbic system is constantly under attack, fight, flight, freeze, yes, pyrols are going to remain high. So we do want to always encourage looking at those environmental factors. Yes, seeking help elsewhere and other ways that can calm the nervous system. I'm glad you mentioned acupuncture because whenever I have engaged with acupuncture, I always leave feeling like, oh, I'm on like cloud nine. I'll go in stressed out. I'll get off the table. I'm like, oh my gosh, wow. I just am so calm right now. And that only took an hour or maybe even a 40-minute session for me to really just get in that zone. And there are a lot of other things you can do at home, of course, breathing and so forth.
Oh, sure.
You know, meditation, you know, things like that, that can calm the nervous system very, you know, relatively quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm so glad that you spoke into that too.
A lot of things are coming down to physics, really. In and out of electronic pathways, charges, which is partially where acupuncture comes into play, moving around certain minerals, elements, electrolytes. It really is a balance of electrolytes moving in the right direction, moving where they need to move to produce certain things or to ignite health, if you want to call it like that. And so through acupuncture and many other ways, even if you want to call it neurobiofeedback, you're actually helping to move some pathways for your benefit. So all these modalities will help to shift a person in the right direction, hopefully.
Wonderful. Yeah, beautifully said. And as you were speaking, Dr. Bowman, it made me think of just kind of going back as well to the light sensitivity textures and so forth. I want to make sure that I don't forget to just, again, stress for people that are listening, because you know, we see there's a lot of judgment here too with people that are ultra sensitive. And like you said, a wool sweater, even if it's like a fine gauge merino wool sweater, for some people can feel like sandpaper on their skin. They're not making this up. They're probably very, very pyroluric. And if you look at all their other symptoms, maybe they're night owl, they've got white spots on their nails, they've got nausea in the morning. In addition to these extremes of mood and behavior, anger and rage, you know, you may be dealing with a pyroluric child or friend or, you know, whatever the case may be. So I wanted to make sure I didn't forget to say that, because I think it's important for our listeners to understand that these ultra, or if you want to call them hypersensitivities or just sensitivities, are actually quite real.
In actuality, you're so correct. And I'm glad you brought up even white spots, because white spots on the fingernails is what we're talking about. That is pretty much a hallmark that, we really might be dealing with pyro disorder here. And so when you see that with yourself, with your kids, with whoever, that's a little bit of a flag to tread lightly, because there may be a volatile emotional response if you don't. So that person is under a lot of stress for whatever reason that they are. And that's just how that goes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and stretch marks. I mean, especially in children. And parents are saying, I don't understand what this is from. My child has stretch marks all over their back of all places. This is so bizarre.
Right.
Well,
rapid growth.
It'd be a good idea to get them tested.
Absolutely. Rapid growth. Once again, zinc is absolutely needed for growth, literal growth. And it will be used for exactly that. Before, like I was saying before, any emotional maturity that comes along with it. So when you see those stretch marks, they're growing a little bit faster than what the zinc can keep up with, and they probably need more of it in some kind of way, either through diet or certainly supplementing would be one easy way to get that done.
Yes, yes. And also understanding that there could be kids, teenagers, especially when by the time you get to college, extremely stressful environments to be in these days. And if there's a genetic component there that runs in the family on top of it. Yeah, very, very much higher risk. So that's another important factor that I wanted our listeners to hear.
No, I was going to say, the stories that we hear just commonly, Johnny goes off to school for college for the first year, and he's not at home to get the wonderful environment of a balanced diet that mom has prepared. He suddenly is thrust into a scenario where he's got to manage his diet, his menu. He's got to manage his social schedule. He has to manage his classes, most certainly, you know, and whatever he does for the activities of daily living, he's got one foot out the door now and he is in control. It is a very stressful situation. So when that happens and the diet becomes, very lax, what it really should be.
Oh, yes. I work with a lot of college kids.
Oh, gosh, yeah. You know, we can generally see that the nutrient base is going to be deficient, and we're looking at a nutritional deficit that could really translate into a lot of depression and stress.
It's so interesting, and I know you see this too, many of our patients that are in college, they don't eat breakfast.
Nope.
Because again, that's another hallmark of viral disorder.
That's right.
They're not eating, they're not hungry in the morning, they're often nauseous.
Right.
So they're not eating until 1 or 2.
Exactly.
And then they're up until 3. And then, you know, they're eating Taco Bell.
Exactly. Think about what they eat, which was my next comment. Well, let's see. It's mostly carbs and carbs and carbs, you know, yes. So we're going to have, maybe we'll eat pizza coffee. 2 or 3, 4 times a week. We'll have coffee to kind of get us going there. We got a little bit of a sugar thing going, so we probably got that going too. Ramen noodles, we know that's one of the staples in college.
Yes.
You know, maybe eat a lot of spaghetti also, but we're talking about the same food over and over. We really are. So you cannot get everything you need out of that. You really can't. So some kids, though, are pretty religious with what they eat in terms of fruits and vegetables, and that's marvelous, and hats off to them, and congratulations. But typically, the diet is a little bit wanting. It
is. Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, very much so. I'm so glad you said that, because even in our, you know, our universities today, I know they're trying. There's maybe a little tiny section for gluten-free.
Yeah.
Maybe if you're lucky, there might be some dairy-free options. But for the most part, it's burgers and Mexican food.
Yes.
And
fries.
You know, lots of soda. Mm-hmm. And
soda.
French fries.
Wine, beer. I mean, that kind of thing.
Yes.
By the time you pull it all together.
And we already talked about the alcohol component.
Exactly.
So we can understand why they're doing that.
Of course.
I want to make sure that we talk about some myths, because there's one that's been circulating for several years now, in the treatment of pyral disorder, and that you need manganese to treat pyral disorder. And this makes me cringe. I know it makes you cringe. We're seeing supplements that have, for pyral disorder, labeled for pyral disorder, that have manganese in them. That can be dangerous. So, I would love it if you could speak into this dangerous myth for us and why that's problematic.
Sure. Here's the deal with that. And it's one where you used to use a little bit of manganese for a particular population. However, there's a lot of trouble that comes along with manganese. If you have tics, Tourette's, a seizure disorder, things like that, manganese, even in small amounts, can cause frequent exacerbations of those things. And so that's one area that, well, no, you know, we can just kind of do without the manganese. You need B6 and zinc, and let's call it a day. But there's also a tendency for manganese to raise blood pressure. And we have known patients that have taken larger amounts of manganese that ended up in the emergency room for really super high blood pressure. And so rather than risk or increase risk for seizures, Tourette's, tics, high blood pressure, we'd rather not go there. There's a group of patients that looks like they manage it reasonably well, but even with that, it's really at a very, very low dose. And those
low
that
dose.
Do take it are actually taking it for more of the reason of managing their blood sugars, which one can do without necessarily manganese. So we kind of avoid using that particular one. It's not the major player. So caution on that manganese scenario. Caution on that one.
And I don't, you know, we don't know how these myths start, you know, and then someone creates a supplement line and they add it in there, and the general public is not going to understand why they're reacting negatively to that. And they'll say, well, I've been tested. I have pyral disorder. I tried this product. It's got zinc. It's got B6 in it and manganese and maybe a little bit of magnesium. And it made me worse. So obviously I can't handle any nutrients for pyral disorder, when that's not true. It's just you took a blend that had one thing in it that was not good for your chemistry.
Exactly.
That created a reaction. Mm-hmm. And see, now we're back to square one again,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. So that one can be left out. It really can. We've been there with that one. It's like it's just not worth the risk. So anyway, stick with your B6 and zinc and EPO if you can do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. And also, you know, our dietary sources as well will more than adequately provide.
Yes, that's it. I'm glad you brought that up. If you're eating even just a reasonably healthy diet, you got to get enough manganese just from a natural standpoint to do the job it needs to do. You don't need to also supplement with manganese. Now, let me make it clear, manganese, different from magnesium, which some people believe it or not.
Yes, thank you for saying that.
So realize that those are two different elements. Magnesium, very good. Helps with tics, Tourette's, seizure disorder. Manganese, very bad, you know, relative to those things.
So thank you for that. I so appreciate your time, Dr. Bowman, and I know you're busy, and it's always wonderful having these conversations with you, and I just want to thank you again for your knowledge and your wisdom and the care that you provide to all of our patients. It's extraordinary.
Well, thank you so much. Like I said, we are only gratified when we see people doing better. And so that's where it comes in terms of, yes, we're doing the right thing. I love it, you know, when that happens. And until that happens, believe me, we are still there trying to balance chemistries where they need to be balanced so that everybody can have really optimized health, mental and physical.
Yes. Yes. Amen to that. Thank you so much.
Hey, my pleasure.
It's amazing to me how pyral disorder and the nutrient deficiencies it creates are the root causes of so many symptoms and disorders, which is why I love how a bio-individual approach to healing can be so powerful. Even fish oil supplements can be inflammatory if used incorrectly. I hope this episode leaves you empowered and educated in the understanding of this stress intolerant disorder and how focusing on root causes instead of symptoms is how true healing occurs. Don't miss an episode of Eat for Life. Make sure you hit the subscribe button on your favorite podcast player.